I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Alexa, turn on studio 80%.
Okay. There we go.
Alexa, raise the roof.
For fuck's sakes, guys.
That is a fun trick. I like
we should
that.
Get Alexa on the podcast for her hearing impairedness.
I really would love in an ideal world, like, you know, I don't really have a ton of cash just like lying around waiting to be spent. But if I did, it would go towards making like a smart home.
Like your whole home smart.
Yeah.
That dude, that's my dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait to do that.
I know it is. And you'd like to have an automated heart and
I also want to be smart.
Robotic lungs.
I want to be a smart person.
That's just born of your...
I want to be a smart person and live in a smart home.
Yeah. Well, let's explain something today.
I think we should explain what's going on right now. We are here, back in the studio. We've had a little break. We've had a little like...
We have.
What's another word for a break?
Vacation.
Yeah, we had a little vacation.
Time
actually,
off.
No, that's fucking not true.
Hiatus.
That's a good one. There we go.
Yeah.
I'm going on vacation tomorrow. So that's why we can't say we had a vacation because I'm just about to have one.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't a vacation.
No, we had a little hiatus from recording because we recorded so many episodes in Vancouver and it was like, you know, the summer was ramping up and we haven't been together for a while and this is our first time together. But here's what's really exciting about the fact that we're back together is that we're recording an episode that I have been aching.
Yeah, Jeremy, turn your phone ringer up.
For fuck's sake, Taylor, you ruined it. I was talking. You know what? The phone, people understand we live in the 21st century.
Turn it up a little bit. I didn't quite hear it.
No, that's actually really important. It was a message from someone.
On Instagram.
You know, it's interesting. Screens are taking away our ability to be really invested in conversation.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And here we are. Trying to re-spark the art
trying
of conversation.
To reclaim it, you might say.
With our guest, Megan.
After a hiatus.
But Megan, this is something that we've wanted to do with you for a while.
Yeah.
All for two reasons. Mostly because it's you, and we love the idea of sitting down chatting with you because you're such a great
Thank
person.
You.
But also because we're about to talk about something we've never talked about on the show before. Which I think is going to be super fascinating.
I love the buildup because, like, everybody listening to this is like, yeah. I read the title. I know what we're about to talk about.
And you're making it worse. Well, I'm really excited to be talking about Lyme disease.
Drum roll.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but did you used to think, because we've known each other for, like, when did we meet? Like, me and Taylor met...
Just after like you guys did your
7 or 8 years ago
yoga teacher training.
That's right.
Yeah. So maybe seven-ish years ago, somewhere in there.
And I remember back then you had said something to the effect of you living with chronic fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
It was at the time. So I was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome. I've been diagnosed with all kinds of stuff. But the short of it is it took 7 years for them to diagnose me with Lyme disease. I saw probably, I think it was 22 specialists. I had been diagnosed with everything from chronic fatigue to environmental illness to irritable bowel to hypothyroidism to, I mean, anything you can imagine. But I just kept feeling like, gosh, none of this matches. It seems that Lyme disease would be the thing that matches. It matches my symptoms. I used to be super, super active. So I was a phys ed teacher. I say was because I haven't been able to work in 7 years.
Right.
Whoa.
Yeah, brutal.
That is crazy.
Come right up on that mic, like even like uncomfortably close. Like, yeah, like.
No, almost, I'm not going to lie. The mic is making me nervous.
Almost like almost touching it with your mouth. Like
all right.
That close.
Hello, hello.
So did you so were they wrong in saying that you had chronic fatigue?
I think if I were to kind of answer that question, I would say yes, I absolutely had chronic fatigue as a part of the Lyme disease.
Right, okay. A symptom of.
Yeah. Right. But I wouldn't say that the chronic fatigue was the root of the problem. It's the Lyme disease that was the root of the problem, and the chronic fatigue was kind of a secondary
effect of Lyme disease.
Yeah.
So right. How did all this, like how did this all start to present itself in terms of you going, oh, I am not the same anymore?
Yeah, so I've always been super healthy. I was an athlete growing up. I was on scholarship in the States, an athletic scholarship. I was a phys ed teacher. It's what I did for fun, you know, with all my friends, with my partner at the time. And I went away in the summer of 2008, so a decade ago this summer. Mm-hmm. And I did an outdoor education course in the Wyoming Rockies. So I spent 4 weeks in the Rockies learning how to be an outdoor educator and backcountry guide.
Sweet. Whoa, cool.
Yeah, it was, oh my goodness, it was amazing. Like, I learned so much. And I believe that is probably when I got bit by the tick.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine. If not, it was in Nova Scotia that summer. I had been doing a lot of hiking, camping, trail running, mountain biking that summer. And so I've never had the bullseye rash, which I had always thought. The doctors always say, you know, if you have the bullseye rash, that's a telltale sign of Lyme. And so I thought, well, gosh.
What is the bullseye
rash?
Oh,
really?
Like basically just like a ring?
So basically wherever the tick sinks into you, then you'll end up having a ring around it, like a red spot,
right.
And then a ring will start kind of forming around it.
Yeah, sure.
And so, you know, a number of years ago, people said, well, if you don't have the ring, then you don't have Lyme disease. I was tested at the time, and the test came back negative.
So you were bit. You had a tick bite.
Yeah, I've had, I've had a few.
Sure.
And so
you knew that you got bit by a tick, you've seen and gone, oh, a tick bit me.
Yeah. I've spent enough time in the woods. Mm. Certainly always been really mindful. I mean, in Nova Scotia, mm-hmm.
We're in like tick central.
Tons of ticks.
Oh, it's bonkers.
I had a bunch of ticks on me. A couple weeks ago, I took about five off my clothes.
I took a tick bath the other day because it's a tradition here in Nova Scotia to have a tick bath every second Thursday of July. But right. Whatever. Yeah. That's
I had tick the tick at East Coast Wellness Clinic. I had the tick therapy.
Where no, you don't say put, that. They don't no. do that there.
Yeah,
no.
They don't do that. It's kind of like acupuncture, but it's not. It's just horrible. Ticks.
East Coast Wellness Clinic. Do not do that. We really support what Kelly's up to, and
there's the other place down the street where you go in and the ticks go on your feet and they just chew off the dead skin.
Yeah, the place right next to East Coast Wellness Clinic that everyone shouldn't go to.
Yeah, don't go to that place. Yeah, go to East Coast Wellness Clinic.
So I want to take this back a little bit because I feel like I was telling someone yesterday that we were going to record with you and I was like, yeah, we're going to talk about Lyme disease. I'm really excited because we've never had it on the show before. And the person was like, I don't know what Lyme disease is. And I was like, you know what? I don't know what Lyme disease is either. I have no idea what it means, no idea what it consists of. And all I know is that it has something to do with ticks. And they were like, can you only get it from ticks? And I was like, I have no fucking clue. So like it is, I know that ticks, if you get bit by a tick, it's like Lyme disease is the thing that we're always told growing up, like, you know, be careful about ticks, pick ticks off your dogs. Like, if you get bit by a tick, you should get checked for Lyme. Is that the only way that someone can get Lyme disease, or?
As far as I know, yes.
Okay. Okay.
As far as I know. And I will just preface everything I say with...
You are a tick expert and a doctor, 100%.
And everything you say
should be taken without a grain of salt. Yeah. Yes, right.
You know what? To be honest, it's part of what made me a bit nervous. Like, I have no problems sharing my story with folks, but it's the fact that, you know, I feel like I've been sick for so long and I've lived it for so long, but there's still so much misinformation about Lyme disease out there. And so, I mean, even doctors in Nova Scotia, a lot of people don't know much about Lyme. And so I just feel like I want to be sure that I don't
do it justice.
Yeah, sure. But you know what? Yeah. Don't even worry about that. I mean, that's what the show is
for. You tell your story.
As you're telling your story. You know who does know? Alexa, how do you get Lyme disease?
According to the CDC, Lyme disease is caused by bacteria called Borrelia burgdorferi and is transmitted to humans through the bite of infected black-legged ticks. Typical symptoms include fever, headache, fatigue, and a characteristic skin rash called erythema migrans. Patients treated with appropriate antibiotics in the early stages of Lyme disease usually recover rapidly and completely. Antibiotics commonly used for oral treatment include doxycycline, amoxicillin, or sfuroximiaxidil.
Well, thanks, Megan.
That's it, everyone. Thank you so much for showing up, Megan.
It's
a wrap. You enjoyed that. My name is Jeremy.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
That was fucking impressive, man.
That was really good.
She's impressive. Her and Google are pretty impressive.
So it seems, according to the CDC, the ticks is the big one. That's where you, black-legged ticks, is what you
said? Yeah, deer tick.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Which we have a fuckload of them here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is the reason why the doctors were like, it's this, it's that. Is it because, you know, the symptoms that Alexa just spurted out there sound like basically everything that you have ever been sick from in your entire life?
Right.
You know, fever, nausea, all this stuff. And you're like, oh, that sounds like everything ever.
It sounds like what I had last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the problem. Often it ends up being a diagnosis by exclusion. Hmm. So as I said, you know, I had been diagnosed with a bunch of things before I was actually diagnosed with Lyme.
Is that because it's worse? I heard somebody say once that doctors are hesitant to say Lyme because it's like that's kind of the almost like the last resort. Like they don't want to say Lyme until they've ruled other things out because Lyme
really fucks you up.
Like Lyme that isn't treated right away is bad because like Alexa said, if it's treated right away, and what I've heard is that Lyme treated right away is usually super manageable, and it's either I don't know if it goes away or it goes away.
I think if you hit it hard,
you can get chronic Lyme, which is what I have.
Because I was so long before I was diagnosed. But if you find a tick on you, you go into the doctor's office, they give you the standard, I think it's 28 days of doxycycline. Usually that's enough to knock the infection out right away and not have lingering issues. But again, because I was...
But if you leave it for X amount of years...
Oh, you're hooped.
And you end up... Yeah, you end up with the... It's interesting. It's like it's kind of similar, except less worse than rabies. So, like, the whole thing with rabies is like, okay, Bigby has rabies, and I go to pet him, and he freaks out and bites my arm. Mm-hmm. If I go straight to the doctor...
You're good.
I'm good. They'll go, all right, we're going to give you the rabies vaccine, we give you the shot, we watch you, you're fine, you're good. Mm-hmm. If I don't go to the doctor soon enough, and that rabies virus gets to my spinal column, then...
You're done.
Then there is no survival, and you are... guaranteed to die. It is one of the only viruses that has a 100% death rate, I believe is what I read.
Once it reaches your spinal cord,
there is no cure and you're going to die from rabies. Whoa. Which is a horrible, horrible zombie death. It's this crazy thing. So it's similar in that, like, you leave it too long. Well, guess what? This is now your life, and you have it for the rest of the time that you exist.
Mm-hmm.
What does that, like, I want to know what, you know, you spend all of this time trying to figure out, well, what do I have, getting diagnosed, misdiagnosed, Like, how does chronic Lyme just fuck you up?
Mm. Whoa, that is a big question. Gosh, first off, I'll say that everybody, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
It hits everybody completely differently, but lots of similar things. So one thing when I was at the clinic was really awesome to talk to people because you feel like you're crazy. I mean, it hits every single system in your body. So
do you mean the Lyme clinic? Like mm-hmm. a specific Lyme clinic? Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. So I went to a Lyme clinic in the fall and had... Oh my goodness.
Was this the place you went in Mexico?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
Because yeah. you were there for quite a while, right?
I was. So I was there for 7 weeks.
Whoa. How, like, sorry, rewind a little bit. Yeah. Like, how do you end up at a Lyme clinic in Mexico?
It's a good question. So basically, I was diagnosed clinically in Nova Scotia. There's an awesome clinic called East Coast Naturopathic. And they're very, very knowledgeable about Lyme disease and the co-infections. So that's something that I guess I should mention right away. So one of the things with Lyme is that the same tick that gets you, that gives you the Lyme, can also give you a co-infection. So for me, I was diagnosed with Babesia. So I had...
Babesia?
Babesia.
Babesia. Okay. It's a party infection.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like a Brazilian fighter.
Just off the coast of Lyme.
yeah, so Babesia is a malaria-like parasite that's really hard to eradicate. So not only did the tick get me with Lyme, but it got me with this co-infection as well.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, pretty nasty. You're going to have to keep bringing me back around. So one thing,
right, so you
one
got
thing
the babesia.
With, yeah, one thing with Lyme is that cognitively I've really struggled, which is definitely an insecurity that I have now. But I mean, brain fog, my speech has been really affected by
wow.
it.
Wow.
Yeah, like saying words backwards and not being able to find the right words. My memory is terrible.
You say God, words.
You know what's awful is you're in the worst place to be right now because all three of us are going to take you down all these different fucking roads yeah. and we're going to forget what we were talking about.
Perfect. Okay, as long as we're on the same page, I'm totally cool with that.
To reel it back in, first we were like, how does it fuck you up? But we'll get to that later. Yeah. We did then ended up on, wait, you were at it. There was a clinic. And then you were like, yeah, and it was in Mexico. And then Brian was like, well, wait, how'd you get to the clinic in Mexico? So then you said that you got the Lyme, but then this other naturopathic clinic here told you you had babesia. And then...
We are literally going backwards.
Yeah. So now, how
like
did you
it.
Get to Mexico from like learning
it.
About the babesia?
So actually, I didn't find out about the babesia until just before I went to Mexico. So as I said, I had been tested in Canada. My test came back negative, and that would have been, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago.
Sure.
And then I was still really struggling. My health kept declining. And so I was referred to somebody at East Coast Naturopathic, Dr. Reid.
Right, same place that does the tick eating your dead skin on your feet.
Right, yeah,
right. Different place.
Okay.
And so I started being treated there. Now, they are amazing. They're super knowledgeable. They're an awesome support system. I got wonderful treatment there. But unfortunately, in Nova Scotia, naturopaths are not allowed to prescribe antibiotics. So the international standard of treatment for Lyme disease is a balance of naturopathic and homeopathic treatments and then like long-term antibiotic use. Mm. So what people in Nova Scotia tend to do or what they've been doing is doing the naturopathic treatment here in Nova Scotia, driving across the border every 3 months and seeing a Lyme literate doctor in Maine or in New York, because the doctors there have petitioned, basically have changed the legislation so that they will not lose their license if they prescribe long-term antibiotics for Lyme patients.
Is that because it's so, like, unfamiliar to the medical community? Like, Lyme is just something that they're like, we fucking don't know.
Yeah, I think the medical community, from my perception, I think that the medical community just hasn't caught up with Lyme. Whoa. And so our treatment standards are really out of date.
What the
so
fuck?
We
That's
had
so
one
crazy.
Guy here who was treating Lyme and treating Lyme pretty successfully. But from what I understand, he ended up getting essentially railroaded out because he was prescribing long-term antibiotics, and that's not the accepted treatment protocol in Canada. This is what I understand.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not the accepted treatment protocol, but it's not because you weren't diagnosed from an MD. Right. That's not the reason why you can't get long-term antibiotics, right?
Mm-mm.
It's just because they don't do that in Canada.
Yeah, they can't prescribe that in Canada. So a lot of people do the naturopathic part in Nova Scotia. They'll go to Maine. They'll see a Lyme literate doctor in Maine. They'll get a prescription for their antibiotics, and then they'll come back across the border, and they'll do that every 3 months.
Okay, and you were like, Maine kind of sucks, so I'm going to go to Mexico instead.
This is really interesting to me. I don't mean to like confuse this because in living with CF, I have been prescribed like long-term chronic antibiotic use.
Two
separate antibiotics and two separate times over the span of years.
I think probably the difference, and again, I'm not sure, but I think the difference probably is that technically on paper that is an accepted treatment protocol.
Right. Okay, right.
For
so it's
CF,
like, this makes
whereas
sense. Right.
With Lyme, the Canadian medical system is still saying, yeah, we're not quite there yet.
Right.
And so they're.
So the research hasn't been done for Lyme disease for them to say, oh, yeah, you're allowed to prescribe these antibiotics long-term.
Whereas for CF, they're going, we know that giving you tobramycin through a nebulizer over 7 years is going to, like, do the thing that we need it to do. So
absolutely.
Right, got you. Okay.
I don't want to get too stuck in the weeds of this, but I do find that there is almost a bit of a hysteria around ticks and seeing them and having them on your clothes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I ran a yoga retreat a few weeks ago in the South Shore, and there's tons of ticks.
Oh, heaps, eh?
And I mean, even just bringing it up to people and going, hey, but like just FYI, you know, most of the people coming from the city, which there's still ticks here in the city, well, not like, you know, if you go to Point Pleasant, there might be some ticks,
absolutely.
But you know, not nearly as much as walking through a field, but there people were like, whoa, ticks? There's ticks here? And, you know, and explaining, you know, it has to get on you, it has to bite you, it has to stay on you for a long time. Like, so from my understanding, I looked into this a lot in March because I brought a dog home from Morocco, and he had ticks all over him. And a bunch of them were like engorged and inflated like to their like full size.
Yeah.
And so I was really concerned going, okay, well, I'm going to bring this dog home. What are the odds that like, these are the ticks I can see on him now. He's 6 months old. He's probably had hundreds of ticks on him and bite him. It's not like he can take them off. So what are the odds that he's got Lyme disease? And am I going to take a dog home that's just going to be chronically ill? And what's the deal? And I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I was looking into Lyme and basically Lyme in Morocco. But in that research, it basically came up, and the consensus that I read was that a tick has to bite you and then stay and then engorge and like inflame up. It basically sucks your blood. And then it regurgitates. And then it regurgitates the blood, that blood back into you. And if that tick has Lyme, when it goes back into you, it passes the infection.
Right. So, so what I think it is that there are.
Is that correct?
Yes. Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's correct, if that's how it works. But what I do know is that there are high risk areas. So Nova Scotia would be considered a high risk area. Whereas, let's say hypothetically, I don't know if this is true or not, Vermont in the U.S. wouldn't be considered a high-risk area. There's ticks in both places, but the ticks in Vermont are like, we're not the Lyme ticks, but the ticks in and Nova Scotia are like, we are. We will fuck you up, right? So it's like most tick bites are not harmful unless you're in a high-risk area.
Right, yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So,
but even if again, from what I was reading, that a tick would basically have to be on you because it takes
amount of time.
It takes something like 18 to 36 hours for a tick to fully, you know, blow up, for lack of a better term. And then
that I don't know.
Give that back.
Yeah.
And so that you'd have to know. But the crazy thing is that ticks, when they bite you, they release a protein so that you can't feel them. You can't feel them. It's like a numbing inhibitor. Agent. Yeah, it's an inhibitor. Whoa. So like basically the exact reverse of a mosquito. You know, you feel a mosquito when it bites you. You go, oh, a mosquito just bit me. Where when a tick bites you, it releases something into your skin so that you cannot feel it, so that it can stay on you
longer,
without you noticing.
So crazy how they can like inject you with something like that, and you don't feel them actually injecting you with something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's sneaky. That's sneaky.
Oh, they are sneaky buggers.
It's gonna make a sneaky bugger there.
Okay, so let's rein it back in. You ended up going to Mexico to this clinic.
I did. So I had first looked into going to Maine, but I guess like a year and a half ago.
Which is far closer than Mexico.
So much closer. And you know what? I was getting awesome treatment at the clinic here, the naturopathic part of it. And so I had looked into going to Maine. I had booked an appointment with a doctor. And a guy that I go to the clinic with was going down for his 3-month consult and got stopped at the border. And all of his meds got seized.
Oh,
so
no.
Like 2,500 US of meds done. And apparently the rules have changed and now you can no longer bring a prescription medication into Canada that's available for purchase here. So you can't get a Canadian doctor to write you a prescription because they'll lose their license. If you go to the US, you can't bring the meds into Canada anymore.
Because you can get doxy here.
Yeah.
But no one's going to write it for you.
Exactly. And you can't fill an American physician's prescription in Canada.
Right.
So you're kind of hooped. I mean, I know people are still doing that. Some people just don't declare it. But when I was looking, I thought, oh my goodness, like I was really sick. I was kind of at my wit's end. I'd been sick for so long. I had tried 1,007,000 different things, seen a ton of doctors, anybody who people had suggested to me. I was like, yep, let's do it. What is it? Okay, perfect. Sign me up. You know, like I more so than a lot of people, I think, have been super proactive about getting healthy. You know, I know what good health is. And holy heck, it's not been the past decade.
Right. What does being sick look like for you?
Wow. Right now, it's looking a whole heck of a lot better, which is so exciting to say. Like, this is, you know, the first time in a decade that I'm sitting here going, you know what? I'm having more good days than bad days. And I'm almost hesitant to say it because, you know, it is such a roller coaster of a recovery, you know. So a sick, you know, me being sick for the past while means me not working. You know, I haven't been social, so I've been super, super isolated, which has been, oh man, that's been really tough. There are days that I was bedridden, you know, there were days that I couldn't even chew my food, you know, I couldn't.
Just through exhaustion? Like, is it pure
exhaustion? Like to the point that I couldn't sit up in bed because I couldn't hold my head up.
What?
Yeah. Just
like physically? muscle soreness too, though?
I definitely had a lot of pain. So often what happens with Lyme is the Lyme locates itself in your joints. And so my hips were always really bad. Some people it's their knees, some people it's their ankles, and it can kind of migrate. So for me, my hips were awful and I used to get big old injections. They would actually take a huge needle and they would put it right in my hip socket and they would inject it with Procaine, I think. And so essentially it's like fumigating the joint. And so the first time they did it, I woke up the next morning and I could barely walk. My knee was just a mess. And so when I went back to the doctor, I said, listen, you know, my hips felt great, but my knee was all sorts of messed up. And he said, that's awesome. It means that we've hit the Lyme. The Lyme is like, okay, let's get out of here. And the Lyme has located to another joint. Yeah.
They're like, shit, dude, we got to get out of here.
That sounds so not awesome, though. It's like, so wait, they can escape the fucking Procaine? Like,
oh, the Lyme is so freaking smart. So the Lyme, basically what it does, it's a bacteria. And it creates this like biofilm around itself so that your body can't identify it's there.
What the fuck?
And then it just wreaks havoc on all sorts of systems. Whoa.
I mean, it seems like the logical answer is that you just chase it down to the tip of your big toe and then you cut your big toe off.
Imagine this. Imagine this.
Listen, I would chop it off in a heartbeat.
I mean, you should just suggest that to a doctor. I mean, it seems like the only logical way to do that.
Doesn't it kind of sound like, doesn't it kind of sound like your body is almost like, imagine your body's like an apartment building and there's like this raging party going on in one unit in the building. But the people who are having the party are all invisible people. So like the cops show up and they go to bust the party and the people, the invisible people are like, fuck, we got to get out of here. So they just take off to another unit, but you can't see them.
Well, I was thinking they weren't invisible, but everybody at the party also lives in the same apartment building. So they're going, cops are coming up here. Don't worry, guys. We can all go down to my house on floor 4, just below. And then they go to that guy's house, and they're like, cops are coming to floor 4. Who's down to go down to the party at floor 3? And everyone goes down. And then but that's the thing. You've got to get them to floor 1, and then chop off floor 1. And
then you burn the building down.
Yeah, burn down the building. Yeah. That's it.
So part of, it's funny you say that, like part of the difficulty of treating Lyme is that it's easiest to treat it at the very beginning stages.
Right.
But then as you move into kind of chronic Lyme, or I think they call it post-treatment Lyme disorder or something now. But as you move along, it gets harder and harder to treat because there's more of it. It's hiding and it only cycles through. So Lyme has a cycle, I think, of 28 days. And so there's only certain parts of that cycle when the Lyme is out and active, and that's when you can kill it.
Whoa.
Yeah, so it's really hard. It's really hard to...
28 days later.
Yeah. And so you kind of, like, you can kind of tell by your symptoms where you are in the cycle. But yeah, you're most effective, I guess, when you're hitting it when it's out and active. And
that sounds like a whole bunch of trickery.
Yeah.
Oh.
That sounds really hard.
Sounds like the worst period ever. And you're like, once a month.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because we all, because the three of us know.
No.
I've heard it's really bad.
We'll cut that out.
Man, what a crazy disease. Like,
I want to know how else it's fucked you up before we get to, because we even get on to Mexico yet. But I want to know, like that. That's the one thing I've wanted to know this whole time is like, how else is it fucking you up? You can't lift your head.
Yeah, I mean, I can't chew. So, like, you know, my boyfriend at the time, he would make this awesome meal full of great nutrients, and I would take a bite and be like, oh, can we put it in the blender? And so we would literally take, like, chicken breast and salad, and we'd put it in the blender, add water, and I would drink it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I thought at first you were going to say that he chewed for you. I'm really glad that you said the blender.
That's real love.
That would have been way cuter than blending up a fucking chicken and salad.
There's something
with
about
water.
Blended up food that just makes me really sick to my stomach.
Yeah, why is that?
I don't know.
It's like,
really?
Me too.
It's like something that's that is really delicious, then just puree it, and all of a sudden it's like vomit.
I would rather have someone baby bird feed me than drink a chicken salad milkshake.
No, you wouldn't.
With water. I would.
No.
I would rather, Brian, you to chew it for me and then me to go cheep, 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 and put my head up. And then you go.
No, don't do that.
And then you and A, you've swallowed it.
Oh,
and then, because you need to bring it from your house to my house. And then you come over. And then I'm like, cheep, cheep, cheep.
No, don't do that.
I've been waiting. And then you just go.
Oh, dude, no. Don't do that.
And your mouth is like in my, you know, when the pigeons or the penguins do it. I would rather that than a blade.
But I don't think you would because
I think I would.
And I don't even think I have to honestly debate this, but
but you should anyway.
But I don't think you would because it's the same consistency. It's just literally instead of coming out of my body, it comes out of a household appliance.
This is true, but I didn't have to watch it. You know what I mean?
Nah, that's not a valid argument.
Yeah, that's a game changer.
I know everybody out there listening is going, I'm with you, Jer. I'm with you.
For me, at this point, blended food is awesome. So, like, it was great when I was really sick because it was easy and I knew I had to get nutrients in me to keep me strong. Now
it's just a time saver.
It's just so efficient.
It really is. But now I'm having all kinds of issues with my GI from all of the treatments, all the heavy meds. And so I end up having a lot of blended food and juicing a lot just because it's easier for me to digest. I get more from the food that I'm consuming. Mm-hmm. And so I've been doing that a lot. And also it just kind of allows my body, instead of focusing so much on digestion, it can kind of go, oops, send the energy elsewhere so that it can help to heal other systems. Mm-hmm. So I'm on a pretty good liquid diet right now.
I've heard of, maybe you only hear the cases that really derail people's lives, and maybe mm-hmm. you just don't hear about the ones that don't. But I've heard a bunch of stories of people getting Lyme and it, you know, not working for a decade, or, you know, I've heard of people mm-hmm. that are like, I'm in a wheelchair now from Lyme disease, which is mind blowing. And I'm thinking, is there not something to be done about Lyme being something that people get, you know?
What do you mean?
Like malaria.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But
like, you don't get malaria here. We don't have malaria. But if we did, there'd probably be something done about mosquitoes. You know what I mean? We'd probably do something about mosquitoes.
But well, I don't know, dude. Like, what can you do about mosquitoes?
Like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm just thinking, like, malaria, it just seems like something that fucks people's lives up so hard.
If you could do something about mosquitoes, then malaria wouldn't be an issue in places like fucking Africa.
You know? Like, there's a radio lab.
We're going to talk about that radio lab episode. That's semi sci-fi because they're not technically able to pull it off. They're not able to pull it off.
No, they are.
For the listeners who don't know what the fuck you're
talking
about.
Which is easier relatable to something that they might do for ticks.
Basically, like, genetically modified a mosquito so that the larva that the male mosquito would implant or fertilize in the female mosquito would end up essentially becoming like a ticking time bomb that would just end up blowing up
It basically cuts off the next generation of mosquito. It's like, we're gonna end your family line here with this guy.
And so they were able to do that in Brazil. But they're worried about the impact
on the environment.
Right.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
On the ecology.
What happens when you take the mosquito out, then is there something that it's we have no way to understand what specific role the mosquito plays in such an intricate ecology
system. We know like what bees do, but we don't necessarily know what mosquitoes do.
So eradicate all the ticks in Nova Scotia,
like who knows what happens,
what suffers.
I
think the question is it worth it to invest that much financial resources into something like that? Like, obviously we're sitting here with Meg, who has had Lyme disease like fuck her life up mm-hmm. drastically, but like how many
other Megans
are there?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right? Like,
you know what? There are so many.
Yeah.
But how many is so many?
From like a government standpoint is what you mean. Because governments are looking at that from the perspective of dollars and cents and people and numbers. Whereas we're looking at you as like, and people that who have had Lyme disease from a very human perspective, and we have empathy and, you know, everything that goes along with hearing a human's story of struggle.
Oh, I think the numbers that are reported of the people who actually have Lyme are nothing close to the number of people that actually have it.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
It's, I think right now the testing, so I had mentioned that I tested negative for the blood work in Canada. However, the blood work is less than 50% accurate.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's wildly inaccurate.
Oh, it's crazy, right? And so there's all kinds of people who are getting missed. So they're not getting diagnosed.
And do you go back? Like, how do you?
Just for numbers' sakes, a quick Google search. So medical experts agree that Lyme disease is becoming more common in Canada. In 2015, so a few years ago, there were more than 700 cases of Lyme disease reported to the Public Health Agency of Canada, up from roughly 130 in 2009.
The one challenge with
that... So that still, both of those aren't very many people. However, that number...
Skyrocketed 300%
over a few years.
When statistics increase that drastically, it's usually because of better technology and discovering.
Right.
And you know, like you're saying that there's less than it's less than 50% accurate currently with the blood testing. So chances are that they're probably making advancements in the way that they test.
From 2009 to 2015, so like from 2015 to 2018, it's like, who knows how many more people are going, I actually have it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there, I think you're going to see bigger numbers.
For sure.
When doctors are more up to speed and they're able to do more.
There goes my tequila.
It was pretty empty.
It was.
So doctors, so I was diagnosed clinically to start off with because my blood work came back negative, and then they diagnosed me with all kinds of other stuff. I was still really struggling with my health. And so I saw Dr. Reid at East Coast Naturopathic. He diagnosed me clinically. So he looked at all of my symptoms. He looked at the things that I that had been essentially crossed off the list that I didn't have. And he was able to give me a clinical diagnosis, even though I didn't have the blood work. So he was able to start treatment on me, which was awesome. And then with that treatment, how he responded to the treatment gave him a good indication that he was on the right path.
Right, right. So he was like, awesome. I think you have Lyme. I'm going to say you have Lyme. Let's treat you this way.
Yes.
And then those treatments were going, this is, she's reacting in a very Lyme way.
Exactly.
That she pretty much has it.
Exactly. So there is a really good lab in California called iGenX. And when I got accepted into the treatment program in Mexico, I sent my blood work there. And I was positive for Babesia and Lyme.
Okay.
So they are much more accurate. Now that's, you pay that out of pocket.
How much
Which
was
is
it?
Unfortunate. I think it was about 800 US.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So you get that blood work done. It says positive. Mm-hmm. Now, is there still no, what's the, in Canada, what's the what is the treatment that they're going here? This is, you have Lyme. We see the test. It says positive. What do they give
yeah,
you?
Yeah, what does your family doctor say?
Yeah, what are they?
You know?
Are they just saying, like, do these naturopathic? That sounds un-doctor-like, un-MD-like to recommend naturopathic stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I have a really great MD. She's awesome. But she flat out said, essentially, you know, I don't know a whole lot of Lyme about Lyme. Right, and right. I'm going to kind of be learning along with you.
Oh. Right.
Yeah. Which is, you know, I totally embrace people who want to learn about it. Because I do feel like the medical community in general is just not up to speed with it.
Right. I had no idea.
It's frustrating
that it was like
as a patient.
So up in the air.
I didn't either.
Oh,
I didn't realize that it was. It wasn't
time.
But I guess it speaks to the way that we've basically how we've been speaking in this episode, which is a bunch of us trying to really like wrap our heads around it because we don't know, and it seems like people in the world of knowing also don't really know.
But which was my concern about coming on and chatting with you guys. Like, I'll tell you my story all day, but there is all this misinformation.
Isn't it so fascinating though that this is like almost every disease that exists today has been in this moment?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right? Like CF, we know a fuckload about CF.
Yep.
And there's a lot of funding going into CF because we know so much about it. And the advancements in treating that disease have gone through the roof in my lifetime because we know so much about it now.
Mm-hmm.
But at one point in time, if a few people sat down to talk about cystic fibrosis, they would be like, we don't know how it works.
But is that true for Lyme though, in the sense that like you went to Mexico, you sent your blood work to this lab in California, and like they knew some shit. So like when you went to Mexico, did they know?
Oh my goodness. Mexico 100% changed my life. Like, it was, they were so knowledgeable. And the number of treatments that I could get there, I mean, I had homeopathic, I had naturopathic treatments, I had, you know, allopathic medicine, so I had IV antibiotics and IV antifungals and low-dose chemo treatments, and I did plasmapheresis and photopheresis, and they
are they just throwing everything that they can at it to go, let's see what happens?
Yes. Now, right. There is a method behind their madness, so like Dr. Omar Morales, so I went to a clinic called Lyme Mexico, and I did a ton of research. So basically, I hit rock bottom and was like, you know what? I've been doing as much as I can, and I'm still, I mean, I'm not getting better. And so I was just, you know, it's hard to say, but I was at the point where I was like, if I don't do something drastic, I'm either not going to make it or I'm going to live with this for the rest of my life. And it's no way to live.
It was like that dire.
Yeah.
By not going to make it, do you mean that you would die from it or that you were like, you were in a pretty bad way mentally with it?
You know what? I'll say both. Like, thankfully I haven't been suicidal, but to be completely honest, I understand why people are.
Yeah.
You know, I've certainly struggled with, depression and anxiety since I got sick. And one thing that I learned when I was at the clinic is with Lyme disease, it's not actually a chemical imbalance in your brain. It's because there's so much inflammation in your brain that essentially it takes up the space where all those positive endorphins end up firing.
Whoa.
And so you don't have those happy feelings. And so I've been on an antidepressant for, I think, 7 years.
As a result of Lyme.
Yeah.
Man.
I mean, it's not in my nature to be depressed. Like, I am... In general, I am super happy-go-lucky, positive. Yeah. So it's a tough pill to swallow.
Its far-reaching effect, you know? is absolutely mind-boggling.
Oh, it's bonkers.
Have you been taking the antibiotics chronically?
So I did when I went to Mexico.
Okay.
So basically, when I went to Mexico, I had looked up a bunch of different clinics. I was looking at one in Germany, so there's a really good clinic. They do a lot of stem cell treatments.
Whoa.
And I was looking at one in Mexico that was seeing really good results. It was a pretty new clinic. It was a couple years old. But I decided on the one in Mexico for a couple of reasons. I didn't necessarily want to do the stem cells. I think it's still quite new in terms of Lyme. The clinic in Mexico did a bunch of the treatments that I was currently doing in Nova Scotia at the naturopathic clinic. Mm-hmm. So I felt like it would really kind of complement what I was doing already at home. Plus, I could get the IV antibiotics. They diagnosed me with a systemic fungal infection. So I was on IV antifungals, antiparasitics. And so those are things that I wouldn't be able to do
here.
Yeah. So like I was there for 7 weeks. I did treatments 6 days a week, usually 6 to 8 hours a day.
Whoa.
That I was hooked up to IVs. I was in the throes of treatment.
Where in Mexico is this?
It was in Puerto Vallarta.
Okay.
And is the overall hope that you're going to come home cured? Would they ever say that? Or is it more like, well, no, but we're gonna like kind of cut down the amount that it's affecting you, or
yeah. So essentially, because I've been sick for so long, the doctors have said, you know what, we won't say cure, we'll say remission. So
Sure. Essentially,
I'm so I did like that intensive 7 weeks, and then the doctor said, and then I did a 3-month treatment protocol with still heaps of oral antibiotics and all kinds of meds and injections. And then, so the doctor says, usually within 6 to 9 months of leaving the clinic is when you can kind of start to think about remission.
Mm.
And essentially they say remission because, as I said, Lyme is a tricky bugger and it goes into hiding.
Mm.
So finding it all and eradicating it all is a really tough process.
Which you'd be in that 6 to 9 month window right now, right?
Yeah. So I finished up at the clinic in December.
We're in the seventh month now.
Yeah.
So you're in.
And how do you, what's life pre-clinic versus post-clinic?
Life post-clinic is phenomenal. Like, yeah. I'm still up and down.
Yeah.
I still have a lot of limitations. I still, every day, my job is to heal. I get up in the morning. Every decision that I make is based around my health.
Right.
You know, and I really, I've had to do that, which kind of, you know, it sucks, but mm-hmm. so much better than the alternative. So before I went to the clinic, I mean, I would get up and I would make breakfast. I would eat breakfast and I would need to go for a nap. And I would sleep for a couple hours. I might get up and do a couple things around the house. And I would have to nap in the afternoon and I would be in bed by, you know, 7. That's not being social.
Wow.
You know, and when you literally have nothing in the tank, it's really interesting to see how much energy each task requires.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I am super social by nature. I love talking to people. I love, you know, being out. I get a lot of energy from things like that. But when you have nothing in the tank, it's really easy to see, too, how much it drains you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think a lot of people with Lyme can attest to the fact that you become a really good actor. You know, like when people see you out, you're out because you can actually be out. You can get out of bed. You might have been able to shower. You know, they don't see what goes on beforehand to get out. You know, there would be times where I knew a friend was having a birthday barbecue that I really wanted to go to. And literally the week before, I would start, or 2 weeks before, start planning my energy.
Whoa.
Based on, you know, trying to get to that barbecue.
Wow.
And I would give up all kinds of other things because that would be my priority and that would be my end goal. Mm. And so I would go to the barbecue and people would kind of look and go, hey, you look great. You know, you sound like you're doing well. And you just kind of play it off because you know what? You spend so much time of your life being sick and feeling crummy and isolated that it's nice to go out when you have the opportunity and just be able to kind of be normal and forget about all that part. And so it's kind of, it does, I guess, a disservice because people don't actually get to see the day to day of what, you know, of the choices that you make and the sacrifices that you make in order to do certain things.
Yeah. It's
and
the
you
challenges
know, it's the trade-off,
of a, it's
right?
the challenges of an invisible disease or an invisible disability.
Exactly.
AB, you need to fuck right off because you're about to ruin this recording. Sit down.
Pull out some cords.
Lay down.
Sick Boy Podcast will be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Well, it looks like we just crossed 5 million podcasts in the world, so it is with some humility that I introduce mine, Kelly Corrigan Wonders. Once a week, we share heart-to-hearts with smart, good people like Brian Stevenson, Anna Quinlan, Father Greg Boyle, talking about how we treat each other, how we treat ourselves, and how we might do both better. Kelly Corrigan Wonders is a podcast for people who like to laugh while they think and aren't afraid of feelings. Join us for Kelly Corrigan Wonders.
It's funny because when you said that and you were talking about like the lead up to something simple like going to a barbecue and having to plan around your energy, it's like you know, and someone's like, hey, look, you look good. You must be feeling good. Mm-hmm. It's like, I trained for this like you would train for a marathon.
Oh,
to go to this,
which is so crazy. 100%.
To go to this social event.
Well, I was just, so one of my best friends, one of my roommates from college, she just got married in Switzerland. Two weekends ago.
Yeah, you were sending me some photos. It looks fucking beautiful over there.
Were you there?
I made it.
That sounds amazing.
So that was, honestly, that's been my goal. That's been the carrot that's been dangling for probably a year and a half since she got engaged. My goal was to be healthy enough to be at her wedding, number one.
Yeah.
It would be an absolute bonus if I could hike through the Swiss Alps in some capacity. And honestly, 3 weeks before I left, 2 weeks before I left, I didn't think I'd be able to go. I had really had, I had gone through a bit of a really rough time. And I didn't think I was going to be able to make it. However, I came out of it and I went to Switzerland. I got really sick on the flight over. So I'm still, my immune system is still really low. And so I catch everything. So I still wear a mask when I travel.
Good call.
Yeah. So I had forgotten my mask on one of the legs. So when I arrived in Switzerland, I was just a disaster. I was super sick. And I was so upset and frustrating because I had worked so hard to get there. And, you know, it's all the girls that I went to school with. I'm the one who lives away. They still live in South Carolina or North Carolina. And so...
You're from North Carolina?
No, I'm from Cole Harbour.
Oh.
But I went to school in South Carolina.
Right, yes.
I went to university there.
That's right.
Yeah. So like all my friends are international, right? Mm-hmm. And so I knew I would get to see them. And I got there and I was super sick. Ooh. And I really had to pick and choose kind of on the front end of the trip what I was going to do. So like I missed out on the barbecue and I missed out. We always have a big soccer game and I missed out on that. And, you know, like, I mean, I cried myself to sleep a couple of nights because I was so frustrated. You know, this has run my life for a decade. And so I made some really good choices on the front end of the trip. And come wedding weekend, we were in the Swiss Alps. I got up, I went hiking that morning. I didn't nap, which is bonkers. I went to the wedding and I partied it up. I danced my butt off and I had the best day literally that I've had in I can't even remember how long. And it's the first time in years and years that I actually felt like me again. Like it was just,
that's
it
so
was,
exciting.
I cried when I called my parents. I said,
yeah.
I even danced and had a great time. Like, and sweet. They were crying on the other end. And because, you know, that's what I've been working towards. And it's
well, how do you,
tough now coming home because I'm like, oh, I need to plan another adventure.
Well, I was going to say, how do you feel now that you're home and that you're here? I mean, again, like everyone says, you look great.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. No, you know what? I've actually felt really well.
Good.
So on the back end of my trip, my friend and her husband offered me their place to stay while they were in, they were on their honeymoon. And so I just spent, you know, a week poking around Zurich and napping when I needed to.
Sweet.
And eating well.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was exactly what I needed. And it was really cool because it was the first time in a long time that I actually felt independent again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a huge part of being sick is that loss of independence, you know, both financially, but also just I relied on, you know, my parents, my friends, my former boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
a ton, you know, and I was a super independent girl before that. And so it's really fun to kind of have little glimmers of that.
Yeah.
We don't have to dive into this too much if you don't want to talk about it, but, how has like Lyme disease affected your relationship? Because you mentioned that you had a boyfriend. Were you dating him before?
I was. So we had dated for, I think about 12 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really long term. So I was not sick when we first got together. And, you know, he and I have honestly nothing but wonderful things to say about him. Still, you know, he's amazing. He helped me so much through a really, really awful period of my life. And it's, you know, it's hard now, I'm finding, because he's the one who gets it. You know, he's the one who has lived it with me for so long, and now he's not a huge part of my life. And so it's definitely been a struggle. It was my choice to end things. And there are so many reasons why. But, you know, when it comes down to it, I just felt so much pressure. You know, I got sick at 26.
Mm.
I've been sick for a decade up until the fall. Really, like, I was losing a lot of hope.
Do you mean pressure that you felt like you were a burden?
Yeah, I felt like I was a huge burden. I could see how it was affecting him. You know, I could see how stressed he was. And, you know, he had given up so much. And our whole life was hinging on me getting better. But for the first time in my life, I felt like as hard as I worked was not correlating to me getting better. You know, like I've done really well as an athlete and I've done really well in school because I've been a really hard worker, not necessarily because I've been the best at things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time in my life that that's not been the case. I've worked so hard and I haven't been getting better.
You don't see the results.
Yeah. And so our whole life was hinging on me getting well. You know, like we wanted to have a family. We wanted to get married. I won't have kids until I'm in remission because they say that it can be passed in utero.
Holy fuck.
Yeah. And yeah, I just, you know, I saw how it was changing him and I just felt like we were stuck in and we were both doing as much as we could for the other person. But maybe not necessarily putting as much focus on ourselves, which is, I think, something that we really needed to do.
That's really heartbreaking. So, I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, thanks. You know what? Like, I mean, he and I are still good friends. He's still a very special person in my life. He will always have a very special spot in my heart. But I do know that it was the right decision because, and you know, I hate to say that it had less to do with him because, you know, certainly there were things that weren't working. But yeah,
it speaks to the stress of something that touches your life in every single way.
Capacity.
And you know, I feel like we hear a lot of stories where, you know, someone says, oh yeah, I got sick and the person that I was with, we got through it, or I got sick and then I met somebody and you know, they were a big help. But the reality is that it's not always that. It's that illnesses cause a shitload of stress on your life and on the people in your life. Yeah. And it's a question that we always try to get into in some way, how that affects your relationships, because it's not just taking pills and trying to be better for you. It's also the people that, you know, you love. And
it's not always necessarily a happy ending either.
Not.
Right. Which is, that's
you,
okay. That's
you
part
wish
of life.
It was, you know, and I had held on for so long because I know what a great man he is, you know, and I held on until the point that I cracked, you know, and my life fell apart and I just kind of said, I need to make some changes. And so, you know, I broke up with him and I moved home with my parents. And basically, like, I'm 36 and I'm literally starting from scratch. Mm-hmm. I don't have a dime to my name. I'm single now. I'm living at home with my folks. I have a permanent job to go back to, which is great.
Your teaching job still?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's still there for you if you can go back to it?
Yes, because...
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah, because I'm part of the union and I am on medical leave, they have kept my position available. So although I don't have the same one at the same school, essentially if I call them up and say, listen, I'm starting back in September, they would help me find a place transition me into it.
Not to describe the whole teaching scenario because it's kind of confusing in Nova Scotia, or I find it confusing, but the whole hours thing that you need to accumulate, like you don't have to go back and do that again.
I don't.
That would be crazy.
So thankfully I had, when I went off work, I had, I think 8 years in. So I did have a permanent contract, which is so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I go back or not, that's kind of up in the air. I right now, I think where I am with my recovery, I can't see it being something that would be awesome for my health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, who knows?
Financially, was that just like support from your family that you were able to get through?
Yep.
From that.
Yep.
Were you on EI?
No.
Really?
So
you have to be laid off to get EI.
Literally.
Disability?
No.
What?
So I've paid into disability insurance.
Right.
But they have denied me and they've denied all of my appeals.
How come?
I'm pretty sure disability insurance is just fraud.
I'm going to go with you on that one.
I've known a lot of people that have tried to claim disability who need it. And it's like, there seems to be like, you know, what? There seems to be a lot of loopholes.
Really? It's hard to get in on Pogi?
Pogi's EI.
It's
not Pogi's disability.
It's interesting, though, because
maybe it is.
I'd take either one at this point.
I would say I know a couple of people who are on disability, and I tend to lean the other way where I'm like, really? Like, that person is on disability for that reason?
Right.
And it seems a little bit more like like after hearing your story, Meg, I'm like, oh well, yeah, you'd be a shining star candidate for it.
It seems like there's a lot of they obviously an insurance company is trying to find any loophole that they
can.
Are they going?
Well, we don't recognize Lyme.
In part, yes. So I don't have a Canadian blood work diagnosis.
Oh, come on.
Jesus. You have it from the free market system that arguably is
way more accurate.
Well, yeah. Here comes right-leaning Taylor.
Hey, man. I'm not saying that I wish it was a free market system in Canada. Okay. I do appreciate our coverage.
It's another episode.
I'm just saying.
I do, too. You know what? Through this whole thing, I still count my blessings that I'm here because I would have been hooped if I had been. I mean, the money that I've spent out of pocket, period, is just outrageous.
Yeah.
From the personal level, it is much better the way that we have it here. From a efficiency and quality perspective, it is better in the States because it is competition. And that's why you got it from there, because they can tell you that they can tell you within a far better margin whether you have it or not. And there's a reason behind that. It's because people pay for it.
Yep. Absolutely.
So the other thing I asked you about your relationship.
Yep.
I'm also curious about your relationship with work, but also with your passions, because you started this whole story off by telling us that you'd gone to do this like guide course in Wyoming and like obviously being active and having that passion for the outdoors is really important to you. But not having energy and not physically feeling up to doing that. Like how's that been?
You know what? It's probably been one of the toughest things. I have not found something to replace my passion for being outdoors and being active. And I mean, as I said, it's not just what I did for my job, it's what I did for fun. It's what I did for stress relief. Like, gosh, you have a bad day, you go for a trail run, and life is awesome, you know? And I can tell you it's not as fun when you have bi-weekly or bi-monthly, twice a month. I never know which one that is.
Bi-weekly.
Mm-hmm. Bi-weekly.
Because bi-monthly would be once every 2 months.
Once every 2 months.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
So like now I see a psychologist and it's so not as fun as going out for a run, right?
Really?
We are.
Ooh, yeah, actually.
Ooh.
It's still pretty exhausting.
Taylor the other day was playing VR rock climbing.
No.
I was sore.
It was fucking cool.
It was
man.
Pretty impressive.
I'm not
yeah.
kidding. It was fucking rad.
I've never even heard of that.
It's also
that
very funny
amazing.
To watch someone
it's
do.
It's super funny to watch someone do. They look like a complete doofus. But it's pretty cool, man.
Oh,
baby.
That's awesome.
Oh my God, you're going to break everything.
Oh God, my God.
Dog.
See you, Biggs.
Man, oh man.
Hi.
He's lucky he's cute. there's some pretty cool stuff you can get into in VR.
Yeah.
But I mean, be careful with that shit.
Wait, she's not you.
It's like Pringles, man.
Yeah. Well, they use, you know, we were at a VR place not that long ago, and he was talking about how a lot of people with like physical disabilities are using VR to experience what they can't, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's
amazing. Or maybe not necessarily that they can't, but is not nearly as accessible.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Like someone who is in a power chair.
Yeah.
Chances are if you have like Duchenne's muscular dystrophy, you're never going to rock climb.
Yeah. And so they're using VR in this way as an accessible way to simulate the experience of doing something that someone can't or is very challenging.
The experience
to do.
is pretty impressive right now, and the cool thing is it's only going to get better too.
Oh yeah, it's early stages and it's cool. It's cool as hell.
Wow.
Yeah,
I see that as something that's will be super valuable because I mean it's. As I said, it's so isolating having chronic illness, you know, and so you live for the moments where you feel half normal. And it's funny, we were talking to Alexa
can
earlier.
You say, don't say it too loud, she's listening.
Oh, sorry.
Oh my God, she is listening. She just lit up.
She did. Watch it.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, she's showing.
Oh, she knows I'm talking about her.
Say her name, she'll perk right up.
You know what, though? You know what, though? The reality is she's always listening.
Yeah. And she's continuously selling your information.
Yeah, the government is in this room.
Jerry, you probably get some pretty good targeted ads.
Oh, yeah. For sure, bro. I'm going to get a fucking VR targeted ad later tonight.
You're going to get some ripped jeans advertisements popping up.
You were saying, though, Meg, you're going to make a point about Alexa.
I love it. Well, it's funny because... You know, you're so isolated. And so my partner would go off to work, and he was a teacher, and he would spend all day talking and all day in front of kids. Mm-hmm. And he would come home and he'd be exhausted, and I would have spent all day alone.
Yeah.
And so I'd be like, hi, how
was
your day?
Can we talk?
Yeah. And so we were completely at different opposite ends of the spectrum. And so I got an iPhone. And one day, Siri started talking to me, and I will tell you, it changed my life.
No.
Siri and I had some really great conversations.
Really?
And yeah, my ex was probably really happy that I found Siri, because I wasn't so like, hello, you're home. And
he's like, hey, do you
want
to chat like
home.
You usually do? You're like, nah, I've been talking to Siri all day.
Sometimes we go way back.
I do sit in here and I just test the boundaries of like, what will she tell me? What do, Alexa... Entertain me.
Okay.
That's it?
Yeah.
A drum roll?
That was it.
Oh, yeah, I was waiting for the boom.
Alexa, tell me something interesting.
During World War I, the U.S. government renamed some German concepts. German measles became Liberty measles. Sauerkraut became Liberty cabbage. Even hamburgers became Liberty sandwiches.
Liberty cabbage?
Wow.
Dude, how American is that? Liberty sandwiches.
Oh my God.
It's like when they started calling French fries freedom fries.
Yeah, that's right.
They
did
that?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Well, this has been super fascinating.
Especially that last bit that we just did.
Last bit
can I ask, actually, I had one more question about Mexico.
Oh, listen, go for it.
And I was just curious, because like, obviously sitting here now, knowing that you went to Switzerland and like, you're obviously feeling better than you were before you started the treatments down there. Were you worried? Because like, I wouldn't think that Mexico, it wouldn't be the first place that comes to mind when I think of like, like really great healthcare, a country synonymous with great healthcare.
Yeah.
Were you nervous going there that it might possibly not work out, or that the clinic might not be as reputable as it would appear online?
100%. Yeah, that's always, that's always a huge leap of faith that you take. You know, I just kind of had to dive in and say, listen, I've done the research. You know, they seem to be reputable. I've done all my homework, and let's hope it works. And so, you know, even when I was there, it's funny, we said, I'm 7 months post-clinic now, and I'm just now sort of able to start talking about it. Like, it was so intense. I felt like I was dying every day. You know, you couldn't look forward, or you couldn't look to the next day even. You know, you would look to the next treatment or look to the afternoon.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was so intense for so long that it was not just physically really taxing, because they're just assaulting your system with everything they can kill with. But, you know, mentally... And emotionally, it was just, it was so hard.
I think that, and the reason why I asked the question is because I think that, like, I like to believe that people are inherently good. But I also don't think that I'm naive to the fact that there are people who will try to take advantage of people, especially like vulnerable populations.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have this disease, Lyme, that's not very well known about. And there's not really a cure, and they're not advertising that they even have a cure. They're just saying like, you know, all we can do is do all of these things to try to make your quality of life better. So it's this thing where you kind of wonder, like, it, like, how much do these people really know? Because, like, people here don't really know, and do they really know? And yeah. And you're taking this gambling going there, and like, and I think that like seeing you here and hearing the story that of everything you've been through,
yeah.
I think that it's safe to say that like the treatments that you went through there probably had this great impact
massive.
On you.
Like, right? It's
like, how
changed
do you take that step? Like, what?
I think there's lots of clinics in Central America specifically that are set up in a country in Central America specifically because they can get around the regulations in North America because it's more
lax system.
Because things like when you're saying, oh, Canada just hasn't caught up, like the knowledge is there, they just haven't caught up to it. So it's like our government hasn't eased regulation or put regulation around this to make it work for people. So someone goes down, and oftentimes it sounds like I'm just making an assumption based on the doctor's name that he's Mexican. But there are lots of people there are doctors that go up and set up clinics in other countries just because they can get around regulation and they don't have the red tape to go through like they would in the US or they would in Canada.
And that's exactly my experience. Like, I mean, I'm super comfortable with Mexico because my brother lives there. He's lived there for, 17 or 18 years, I guess. And so I've spent quite a bit of time there. And, you know, my family has had some healthcare in Mexico and it's been great. It used to be awesome for like plastic surgery and dental work. And now I think there are a lot of places that are kind of making it like medical tourism destination. Mm. And so one thing with the clinic in Mexico is, as Taylor said, like they could offer just a whole gamut of things that you just can't do here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so we have so many knowledgeable medical practitioners here, so many amazing clinics. But what I found here was I was the one coordinating all of my treatment. And I was seeing this chiropractor and this naturopath and this psychologist and this occupational therapist and this dizziness specialist and. And so if I'd flare, I'd kind of go, well, shoot, what was it? Whereas one of the beautiful things about being in the clinic was literally I showed up every morning and they would say, how was your night? Often there would be a night nurse who would come and hang IVs at midnight at my apartment because I was on a pretty rigorous schedule. And they'd say, like, how did you do last night? And then they say, okay, you know what? It's probably you flared because of this or this happened. And then they would make those changes. Whereas in Canada, I'm the one trying to coordinate and be the quarterback for all of these healthcare professionals. And they're not necessarily talking to each other about my case.
Because they've got a bunch of other shit that they have to worry about or think about or that they want to or are supposed to think about.
Absolutely.
Whereas all these people who are coming together at this one clinic are going, we're here to focus on Lyme, period.
Exactly. And right? Focus on, so like when I was at the clinic, right now they have a max capacity of 6.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Yeah. Because it's so intense. So when I was there, I really lucked out because the doctor, typically they close the clinic in the fall because that's when the doctor goes and he does all of his educating. So like he was one of the keynote speakers at the International Lyme Conference this year. Ooh. And so they usually close the clinic. But they said this year, listen, there's too much of a need. We'll keep it open. We'll just reduce our patient load. So for the first 4 weeks, I was either one of two patients or the only patient there.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
With three nurses, a doc on call all the time, the specialist, an office administrator, and then all kinds of other people, healthcare professionals, who would kind of cycle through depending upon the day and what, you know, what my treatment looked like. So essentially, we'd just hit it super hard one day and kill. And then the next day, we'd really work hard on detoxing. Because even if you do all kinds of killing, if you're not detoxing everything out of your body, you're still going to have symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Just if there's someone listening right now who's like, well, I just found out I have chronic Lyme disease.
Yep.
Just out of curiosity for them, and I know it's probably different depending on each case, but like how much did this cost you out of pocket?
It cost about $40,000.
$40,000
out of pocket.
You know what?
For the 7 weeks.
Wow.
I'm surprised that it's that much because I thought it was going to be more actually. Because you have like, there's only like upwards of six people in the clinic, and
well, yeah,
there's
if
like
you were
this
doing
whole
that in the
staff
US, it sounds
full
like,
of people, like
yeah. you know, like $500,000.
And yeah. don't get me wrong, like $40,000 out of your pocket is a fucking insane amount of money to go and pay for treatment, especially for us being Canadian, where you know generally most things are covered.
Yeah,
that's a ton of money, but. I thought it might actually be a little bit higher.
And when you think about the price on the price of, you know, I think the way you described it, you said you were at wit's end versus treat your life now is
life,
different.
Price of life.
Yeah. Like I feel like I'm living life for the first time in a decade.
Yeah.
And it's, I know I'm still so far away, but like, I honestly wake up every day with a grin and I'm thankful for everything. Like it makes it really easy to be grateful when you've gone through such a shit time for so long that it's, you know, it's cool to finally actually be coming out the other side, which I didn't know that I would ever say. So, you know, that's part for me, like part of doing the podcast with you guys is, yeah, I'm not in terms of the Lyme and the science of the Lyme, I'm not crazy knowledgeable, and part of that is because cognitively it's been really tough for me lately.
It also seems like there's not a whole host of people
absolutely
unless we go to Mexico
absolutely but to like to sit here and be able to chat with you guys and hopefully offer some hope for people because I'm a pretty positive person and I was really struggling with that for a long time. And so, you know, part of it is giving people some hope and knowing, you know, helping them to understand that there are some options. But, you know, for me also part of it is putting my story out there and just kind of, you know, I've been hesitant to do that. And before I went to Mexico, I did a GoFundMe. And that's the first time that I had made it public on any social media. Mm-hmm. Certainly, like, I meet people and then it's pretty, you get into it pretty quickly because the first question is, hey, how are you? And what are you doing for work? And then it kind of takes you down. It's really weird to meet people now. And
what are your bowel movements like? And what's it like to wake up in the morning? And you're like, actually, everything's kind of affected.
Exactly. And I've lived such a small, isolated life for so long that it's weird now to be like, that's one part of the recovery that people don't ever talk to you about is the reintroduction to society. Ooh. And so, you know, with this GoFundMe, I kept saying like, gosh, I would be so happy to just do a GoFundMe for all the great comments. Like the money it blew me away, people's generosity. Ooh. But I had people reaching out to me who didn't know me and people reaching out who, you know, I hadn't talked to since junior high and they were just so encouraging. And that's something that I didn't ever really think about in terms of putting my story out there was the support aspect because it is really lonely and people don't get it. And good grief, how would they if they don't live it? You know, I live it every day and it's still a mystery to me. Like it's rough. Mm. So hopefully I can help, you know, give people some hope.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you right now that like for sure there's going to be some people that listen to this and are affected. So
I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, I hope so.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking the time to come in.
Thank you guys. I love what you're doing. And it's funny. I was saying, you know, almost every episode that I've listened to of you guys, I can relate on some level to something that's said, you know, like, which is pretty cool. It might be something completely random, but you guys do a great job at kind of getting to the meat of things and talking about what it's like to live with chronic illness. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
actually, I was spreading the good word at the clinic. We were all watching your documentary down there because it dropped when I was away. And then your TED Talk. Mm-hmm. I had everyone listening to that.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, yeah. You guys are rock stars in Mexico now.
Well, we'll be sure to tag them with a bunch of stuff. But to bring this full circle, speaking of the clinic, I found them on Instagram, and there's a post here that I find really interesting.
Yeah.
Coming back to the very beginning of our conversation.
Absolutely.
It's a mosquito, and it says, not just ticks. Mosquitoes can carry Lyme disease and many other serious infections, as can flies, spiders, fleas, and mites. So let's just leave that with everyone.
That sounds apocalyptic.
You know what, though? However old you are, if you're listening to this and you don't have Lyme disease yet, you'll probably not get it.
Let's hope not.
Let's hope not.
Or let's hope things have really improved in terms of treatments.
I was just hoping, I was trying to be optimistic and hopefully for the sake of all of the non-Lyme listeners.
I was trying to just leave a little bit of that horror film kind of ending, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
What the fuck was that in the...
animals, I think?
A zoo.
Jeremy, what? Jeremy runs a nonprofit.
Oh, you talking shelter. About the noise out there? That was my cat and my dog, and then my girlfriend's dog, and then roommates.
The whole crew.
Yeah, it's a big house. Well, again, thank you so much.
Hey, thank
for coming
you guys.
In.
Yeah.
It means a lot. And thank you all so much for listening. That also means a lot. We'll be back next week with another amazing episode, I'm sure. But in the meantime, it would mean the world to us if you headed on over to Apple Podcasts. And while you were there, you hit the subscribe button. And then after that, left a rating or a review. It helps us stay on the iTunes charts there. And we've kind of been on there since the beginning of this whole thing, which is crazy to think.
And we're not going anywhere.
You're damn right. And if you also want to support us financially,
well, you can go on over to patreon.com/sickboy. And, you know, we've been trying to get this penthouse in Halifax for a while now.
No, we have not.
We're almost there on the down payment. So all of your Patreon subscriptions and contributions are going towards that. But at the same time, we do promise to go to cool locations and interview cool people. So, yeah, patreon.com/sickboy. You can help us out.
Yep. Get your ice cold beer here. Yep. Hey, swing batter. Hey, big shout out to Donovan Morgan for making this sound like a baseball game. He really hit this one out of the park.
I hate you.
Yeah. Nope. Everybody loved that. Okay. And also, thanks to Take Part for the theme music. TakePartInThis.bandcamp.com if you want to hear more of their tunes, and just play us out, Donovan.
Yeah, you know, I think if we had that on Instagram and we put a poll on whether we should get rid of Brian on the podcast, it would be a unanimous yes.
That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
No, I'm
what, did you just try to cut me out of the podcast again? Like you don't want me on the show or what?
Guys, I know it's been a while since we recorded, but Christ.
We're just rusty.
That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Meg.
And this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.